श्री गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्रीराज महाराज की जय, श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा की जय, तिरुबाप महोत्सव तिथि श्री बस पंडित महाशय की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। सो गुड इवनिंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू प्रेजेंट हियर, एंड good morning, good night, whenever you are connected online over there as well. So today we are meeting again here in Sofia, Bulgaria, and today we are celebrating the disappearance day of Srivastan Thakur, Srivast Pandit, also known sometimes one of the most important associates of Sriman Mahaprabhu. Interestingly, we were speaking today, last year we were also celebrating the same festival here. It took place, of course, on a different day according to lunar calendar, but I was also here on a different day.
Next year again.
Have to see how to make it fit. Let's see the calendar. So, again, we give lots of importance to this type of celebrations. Tirobab Mahotsav. Mahotsav means great festivity. Tirobab refers to the disappearance day of someone. And all these different celebrations in our Panjika, which means our calendar, Vaishnav calendar, they have a purpose. No? It's not that it's just there to fill in the voids and to have some in between days between Janmashtami and Gopurnima or something. So it's important that we get accustomed to pay some attention to this. It's not just, as I used to say, okay, tell me when is Janmashtami, Radhashtami, Gopurnim, Gurudev's Vyasa Puja, and I'll be there. But the next of the other days is like, who knows who is Abhiram Thakur or Gangamata Goswami? Not so important. Sometimes we may think like that. I mean, maybe not directly, but we are not considered, okay, this is not so important. Or as we were saying the other day, we were speaking on Rath Yatra, and Rath Yatra will happen in 1 week or something, but we were speaking in Alachua like 3 weeks before the event. So you may think, why you are speaking 3 weeks before the festivity? Because you need to prepare your consciousness for that day. It's not that, okay, tomorrow is Gopurnim, so somehow I'll try to align with Mahaprabhu tomorrow. No, it's not that such a cheap exercise. So ideally we should be preparing for this thing, anticipating as much as one can, but at least to understand the necessity for that. In many ways, many times, Vaishnavas organize Harikatha before some of at least great celebrations. I don't know, Janmashtami or Gopurnim. Sometimes they begin Harikatha 1 month before that. Just to create this idea of something important is going to happen. Of course, we could do the same with every festivity, but we don't have more. We have only 365 days to create many katas in anticipation. But it's important that somehow we appreciate, we measure the value, the weight, the depth of these days. Especially Tirobab Mahotsav, festivals of disappearance, where we can enter in connection with these personalities by separation. Union in separation, that's the way we can. That's our way to attain union, through separation. Mahaprabhu himself showed that. He was successful in tasting Radhabhav. How? Entering through the low tide of separation, and then he attained the high tide of union. That's the way. So advancement is through feelings of separation. This is a whole art that we need to learn gradually. So Tirobab, days of disappearance from the Vaishnavas, are special opportunities to train our hearts into this sacred art of feeling separation and feeling union in separation. Because, yeah, on a daily basis, that's part of our life, as we were speaking yesterday. Even if you go, if you take a look at what's going on eternally in Golok Vrindavan, there is separation every day. At least for some period. Krishna is never leaving Vrindavan, but he's leaving the town and goes to the forest for some hours, and there's separation, and all the Brajavasis are somehow surviving in separation, but experiencing union in separation from Krishna. Similar thing when, for example, I don't know, Lachila Siddhar Maharaj will say, sometimes disciples have to go through the experience of having their own guru leaving this world. That can happen. We shouldn't be naive enough as to, that won't happen. Of course, it may not happen because you may die first, which generally is not the case, but you never know. So we shouldn't be naive enough to think that that may not happen either. But also we should know how to find union in that separation. That's, Srila Siddhar Maharaj would say, that's the real test of a disciple. When some of Prabhupada's disciples went to him after Srila Prabhupada entered Nityalila Pravishta, and he knew, okay, Srila Prabhupada ended his pastimes here, Prabhupada, Srila Siddhar Maharaj said, okay, now we will see who was a real disciple. Now we will see who remains connected despite his physical absence. Because that will show how much your previous connection was physical only, or substantial. And physical form may not be there, but if the substantial connection was there, will remain there, will increase it. So all these type of festivities are somehow like training and preparing us to become more and more experts into this art of union in separation. And again, each one of these personalities are very important, because they are embodiments of the goal to attain. Hopefully, we want to attain divine love as the goal of our life, or the goal of our lives. That may take more than one. It's a long-term project. But if we want to attain that, we will be interested in knowing about the lives of those who personify that goal. If I want to attain Prem, and I know that there are some personalities who are embodiments of Prem, I should be interested in knowing about all that I can know about those personalities, so somehow I can become sprinkled by their life and example and teachings. So Sri Vaspandit is one of those, eternal associate of Mahaprabhu, and as we will see, especially important for us because he personifies the perfection of the Tathasta Shakti. So we are Tathasta Shakti, but we, at least I, represent the imperfection of the Tathasta Shakti. If you want to meet the embodiment of the imperfection of Tathasta Shakti, you just have to meet Padmanabha Maharaj. And if you want to find the perfection of the Tathasta Shakti, you just have to meet Sri Vaspandit. So that's a very important point, as we will see, for us in particular, who are so much in need of getting closer to all that we can be as Tathasta Shakti. So we should have some interest in knowing about the life of all these personalities, especially if we don't know them. That shows how much we need to know them. If I tell you, oh, today is the appearance day of whatever, Jagadish Pandit, and you say, I don't have a clue who he is. Okay, but you know that he's eternal associate of Bhagavan and this embodiment of Prem. That's enough for you to be willing to know about him. And especially if you don't have a clue who he is, that shows how much in need you are of knowing who they are. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions something like that. No? He mentions that maybe on our stage we still do not feel that strong inclination, but we know we should, something like that. But when one reaches the stage of Ruchi, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, which may be maybe not short-term goal for most, but not also long-term, maybe middle-term goal to attain. He says, in Ruchi, one feels lots of attraction to know about the lives of these personalities. Well, we'll be like desperate to know more about them. Because before Ruchi, he says, one identifies the divine with God, with the guru, which is okay. I mean, we have no problem with that. But then after that, the recognition, the acknowledgement of the divine broadens. And it starts to encompass, you say, to address also those devotees who are advanced and who personify In the beginning, it's God and me, or if I am a little bit more generous, my guru and me. So still it's more Kanishtha-like mentality. But eventually you start to recognize, oh, it's not only Guru and Krishna. There are so many personalities who are personifications of this love. And I'm so needy about knowing them. I need to know about them. Again, not like psychological pressure. At one point it will be like the most organic necessity. I need to know about them. Like you may feel in the present stage, I don't know. I need to go to the bathroom. It's urgent. I cannot wait. Okay, go. At one point, I need to know about each one of the associates of Mahaprabhu. I cannot wait. So when or when that day will be mine? We'll have to pray. So Srivas Pandit is one of these personalities. He's a member of the famous Panchatattva, which is a very interesting way in which the doctrine of Mahaprabhu took shape in the unfolding of the tradition. That's another whole different conversation, how what Mahaprabhu came to give started to take shape throughout the different years and generations and biographies written about him, hagiographies technically speaking, which are seven main of them. We may know mostly Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Charit from Murari Gupta, Chaitanya Chandradaya, anyhow, there are like seven of them. And there is a very interesting way of perceiving a particular development in the emphasis on different sides of Mahaprabhu throughout these biographies, which find their culmination in the last one, which is Chaitanya Charitamrita, which for us, this is like the final word on Mahaprabhu. So one of these particular developments, if you will, that take place is with this notion of the Panchatattva. That is not present in the very first biography, but eventually starts to take shape, and it says that this is actually a contribution of Swarup Damodar Goswami. So Panchatattva means the five truths, basically. That's the meaning of Panchatattva. And there's one pranam mantra which says Panchatattvam makam krishnam Bhakta Rupam Sarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhakta Kyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. So there, these five principles are venerated. My Guru Maharaj, his last book he wrote is basically an explanation of the Panchatattva, sacred preface. It's an explanation of the Mangala Charan of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is an explanation of the Panchatattva, if you will. So Bhakta Akyam, Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. So Bhakta Akyam, each one of the five members of the Panchatattva represents something in particular. I won't enter into full detail with that. Mahaprabhu represents Bhagavan himself. Nityananda represents the Prakash or the expansion of Bhagavan. Balaram Nityananda. Advaita represents the principle of avatar, divine descent. Gadadhar Pandit represents Bhakti Shakti or Swarup Shakti, internal potency. And Srivas, or as we say in Panchatattva Mantra, Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Which means Srivas and all the other assembled devotees of Mahaprabhu represents Tatastha Shakti. And they're headed by Srivas. No? And Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, then we fit there, in the Adi Gaura Bhakta. We are part of the Panchatattva, by the grace of Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva. Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So the Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda, the assembly of Bhaktas of Mahaprabhu, somehow we have been invited to be part of that most sacred royal assembly, which is again led by Srivas Pandit, who personifies the perfection of the Tatastha Shakti. Also, interestingly, as you may know, Srivas Thakur, Srivas Pandit, sometimes he's even called Srinivas, which is not to be mistaken with Srinivas Acharya. But we were just singing one song before, and in the line that corresponds with Srivas, Narottam Das Thakur is Srinivas. Srinivasa, Haridasa, and so on. So Srinivas there means Srivas Thakur. But at the end of the song, he's saying, Doya Koro, Sri Acharya Prabhu Srinivas. Then he's referring to Srinivasacharya, who is his friend, basically, no? And anyhow, just technical detail, because sometimes the same word refers to different people in the same song. So now, Srivas Pandit, Srivas Thakur also is, again, showing how Tathasta Shakti can attain its perfection under the influence of bhakti. And that's also, he's connected with whom? Because of this, in this connection, that's how he personifies bhakti. He's connected with Narad Muni. And Narad Muni, he's describing the Bhagavatam as when there comes a description of Shakti Abhish Avatar, different personalities who are empowered by Krishna with some particular Shakti, Narad Muni is one of them. And he's empowered with Bhakti Shakti. He's a Bhakti Shakti Abhish Avatar, if you will. So again, there's a connection between him and Srivas, because they are showing the personification of Tathasta Shakti, fully empowered, fully penetrated by bhakti, if you will. So again, Srivas Pandit represents the highest reach of the Tathasta Shakti. Tathasta, as you know, means not here, not there, something like this. Like this, sometimes the example of the Tata means the line that lies between the water in the beach and the, how is it? The shore, the sand. So you cannot put the finger on that line that divides one from the other, because it's coming and going, moving. It's here, this is the line. Wait 1 millisecond, it's somewhere else. So Tathasta means that we are, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, we are units of adaptability. So we can exist under one environment and under a different one. So as Bala Jivas, conditioned souls, we have, from time without beginning, Nadi, we have existed under the shelter, quote-unquote shelter, of Maya Shakti. So we can give some testimony of how it feels. We won't enter into the personal details. That may take some time, because it's coming from time without beginning, so you have a lot to tell. So somehow we can exist under that influence. Of course, it's not a very comfortable existence, but somehow we managed to try it a pretty few number of times. Still, we are here, having some hope yet. So my point is, that shows the adaptability that we have. Of course, we can become we can adapt ourselves to very strange, weird, dark, low situations. And of course, that may show to us indirectly how much we have potential to adapt to very deep, profound, and high situations. Like I was hearing recently from one psychologist, he will say, like, before you become aware of how much enlightened you can become, basically the same idea, he said, you have to become aware of your darkest potential. Maybe that may be more relatable in your present situation. How terrible you can be. The worst possible thing. Not to identify with that, but just to have a glimpse of, oh my God, I can reach that. I reached there. And I know I can continue going even lower. And there's no limit how much can I can explore the shadow lands, if you will. So all that indirectly showing me how much, if I redirect that potentiality, I can reach the heights of reality, basically. And of course, Srivas Pandit comes to tell us that's possible. And he himself is showing that example of all our potential directed in the best possible direction under the shelter of bhakti. Mahatmanas tu mam paritam daivim prakriti mashrita. Like Srila Siddhar Maharaj, no? When he defines guru, he says this, no? Very nicely. Speaking too quickly?
No, it's okay.
Okay, let me know. So, you may know this definition. He was asked, what's guru? I mean, of course he said many things. One of them is, guru is your own potential appearing in front of you. That's Guru. When you feel someone is showing me all that I can be, Guru is manifesting in my life. One person, another person, but the principle of Guru, Guru Tattva, is revealing in my life in that precise moment. When I have a glimpse, or more than that, of all that I can be. No? Personified in someone. A person who is living his, her life, conducting himself, herself in such a way that is constantly reflecting, reminding me, this is all that you can be. In a loving way, of course, not like imposing. This is all that you can be. This is all that you should be. Not from that sense. Even without saying a word to us. But just silently being so exemplary that it's just pointing at our highest prospect. No, it's not that that person is saying, I'm so high and you are not, or something like that. Actually, even without saying, it's telling us, you can be here also, you can reach this. And of course, that's a commitment. That's a big commitment. When you meet such a person, it's a great blessing, but also it's a great responsibility because you have in front of your face constant reminder of all that you can be. And you're going to say like, oh, I didn't see that. No, nobody told me about that. No, you have that person in your life, and that's a constant reminder. So what will you do with that? You follow. It's not that Guru is just some like nice figure, that nice guy, lady, that tells nice things and comes once a year, and that's all. No, it's like a constant reminder. Again, it shouldn't be a torture. It should be like filling me with hope and inspiration. That person, even in my darkest days, in my most cloudy days, if you will, in my consciousness, that person is still pointing me to this light at the end of the tunnel. This is all you can be. Although now you are here in the depth of the well, dark well, this is all you can be. And as we always say, they are seeing us according to our potential. That's the merciful glance, the merciful glance of the sadhu. He or she is not just getting stuck in what we are now, what we were in the past. They are passing through that, penetrating that, and just seeing, oh, all that you can be. You have such a bright potential. You have such a bright future. I'm considering you for all that you can become. That's who you are in the eyes of the sadhu. That's extremely generous. Generally, we are not that generous with ourselves. Even if the sadhu is telling you, this is all that you can be, I would like to help you. Generally, our mind is unfortunately so much adapted, like, no, I'm so such a rascal, I'm so negative, I have this, and I'm. And you try to bring that down. And when the sadhus are trying to show you, look, that bright horizon, you try to insist, no, but look that shadow, look that dark side. And the sadhus say, that's nothing in comparison to that. And we insist, no. And that's the tapasya of the guru. No? In dealing with the disciples, no? I mean, but the guru is accepting that role. Okay, you insist in the direction of darkness. Let's insist one more time. Look in this direction, your bright future. When Srila Semaraj said that once, he said, your future is brilliant. Try to imagine someone like Srila Semaraj is looking right in front of your eyes and saying, your future is brilliant. What must he be seeing? We don't have a clue about that future. But we should, at that moment, trust. Okay, I trust Srila Siddhar Maharaj's vision way more than mine. If he's seeing a bright future, there must be some bright future. I cannot even conceive of that now, but he's confirming that. And those personalities have given us a glimpse of that bright future. I mean, I think that's why we remain here. If not, we should be doing something else, losing hope. But if we somehow still are here after so many years that I'm coming, and all of you still remain here. Some hint was there, some glimpse was there. Well, all that you can be. I hope that sadhu is not paying all of you for coming to the class, so I feel, oh, nice group of people here. So, again, Guru is an all-in-sync connection to Srivas Pandit, this ideal personification, all that you can be. They are representing this in our lives. All that we can be. And I know that can be terrifying. because we don't have a clue of all that we can be. And sometimes, this is strange, but sometimes works like that. We are afraid sometimes, not sometimes, generally, always, of the unknown. Whatever we don't know, we are afraid of that. Because that means, again, I have to go out of the comfort zone. I have to enter into the realm of mystery and paradox and whatever may happen there. So whatever is unknown generally gives us apprehension, some fear. And interestingly, not only because we could say, yes, my subconscious is unknown and my most shadowy places are unknown, so I'm afraid of looking at that direction. Okay, I understand. But interestingly, our brightest potential is also unknown. And just because it is unknown, it may be terrifying to us. Not because it's something bad, but just because it's unknown. And we are fearful of anything that is unknown. So the Guru is trying to show you your brightest potential, but since we may not have a clue of that, we may be terrified of that proposal. But at the same time, of course, we see, I'm terrified, but at the same time, something nice is coming from that direction. So there comes this type of struggle, if you will, of the sadhaka, like, I'm terrified by that invitation to the unknown, but some sweetness is coming, some purity, some charm is coming from those personalities. So I feel some attraction and hope, but at the same time, terror comes into the picture in between. And this is the back and forth of the sadhaka. No? Like surrender, oh no, surrender, oh no, I don't want to jump, no. That's what Krishna is saying in the Gita. Abandon everything and surrender to me, and then immediately says, don't fear. Because he knows we are lulu. No, jump. I'm here on the ground waiting for you. Like if you are just on the border of a cliff, you say? Mm-hmm. And on your back there's a whole like army of monsters ready to devour you. So and you hear a voice telling you, jump. And it's a flute also. Do you hear a flute with the voice? Jump, no, it's a flute call. Sarvadharmam paritya. Krishna is telling you, jump. I will receive you. And you look over the cliff and say, oh, but I don't see anyone there. Because it's so high that you cannot see who is there. But you hear the voice. And the army of monsters is getting closer. So if you don't jump, army of monsters will do what they have to do. So you have no option then to jump in one sense. But sometimes you don't trust. So in that moment, maybe some person comes next to you and jumps before you. Arivo! And then after some minutes, the person comes back again and says, here I am. I jump. I was received. I'm saved. So your turn now. But the person will say, let's jump together. If it's still too scary, because he will see, she will see, still we are. We cannot trust that easily. Okay, let's do it together. And the army of monsters is almost ready to devour you at that point. So, some way of illustrating this call to surrender that sometimes we come back and forth. But this is really paradoxical. We are not only afraid of the unknown of our darkest shadow, but also of our brightest potential. So when Guru is personifying that, we should try to work with that in such a way that we are not afraid of the sadhu. I know it sounds like, of course we shouldn't be afraid of the sadhu, but sometimes we may be more afraid of the sadhu than of any other person who is not sadhu. Because every other person is not taking me to the unknown. It's just keeping me in the comfort zone. So you feel, oh, I'm so safe here, I'm so loved here, it's so comfortable, so nice. I'm so secure, but the sadhu comes like, oh my gosh, you feel it. Dun, 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 dun. Comfort zone is over. But that's where we have to really be intelligent and sincere and realize, no, real comfort is coming. In the words of Srila Sivasankara Maharaj, home comfort. Real comfort from in home comes from the sadhu. Although it may seem you are being kicked out of the comfort zone, you have to understand real comfort is out of the comfort zone. Comfort zone is not comfort zone, basically. So, my point is, Srivas Thakur represents all this. That's why we are speaking about that, and we are celebrating that. We are celebrating our potential today, if you will, personified in the figure of Srivas Thakur, who also, apart from being identified with Narad, who is the personification of empowerment with Bhakti Shakti, that's all that we can be, empowered by Bhakti Shakti. Interestingly, he's also connected with Madhu Mangal. So this is a second interesting connection that Srila Jiva Goswami makes in the Gopal Champu. Who is Madhu Mangal? He's a Brahmin in the Lila, Raja Lila, who is a Priyanarmasaka, who's an intimate friend with Krishna. He's like adopted son in the house of Nandan Yashoda. He's there, the Pujari. Of course, he's a Bidusaka also, which means, how do you say in English? Buffoon. No? Someone who is always making jokes. And always like showing off his Brahminhood, no? For the sake of having bigger plates and bigger and bigger plates and filling his belly like a very good Brahmana. So he's always bringing forth some interesting elements of Hasya Rasa into the picture of this mellow of laughter, if you will. And Srivas Pandit, interestingly, in some of the Gaur Lilas, he's exhibiting this side of Madhu Mangal. Once they are doing, celebrating her a Panchami, which is a celebration that comes after the Rath Yatra. And they made like a drama with Mahaprabhu and his devotees. There are many instances where they perform dramas. And they will act different characters. And Srivas will play Madhu Mangal. And he starts to do these noises that Madhu Mangal does on the armpits, making sounds like this and things like this. So, and on other occasions, again, Srivas will play roles of Srivas, of Narad. So, our Acharya have identified them also in these connections. So, let's go a little bit to the life of Srivas Pandit also. No? Till now, we have been speaking about his, if you will, ontological position, who he is, who he represents. But how this plays out in the context of Mahaprabhu's Lila. So, in Gaur Lila, Srivas Pandit appears as a senior of Sri Chaitanya Dev, someone who was born before him. As we know, whenever Bhagavan is about to perform his Lila, many of his associates come before to create the setting, the stage for him to be manifest, like Advaita Charya, Haridas Thakur, or even previous generations like Madhavendra Puri and so on, Ishvara Puri, what to speak of Sachi and Jagannath Mishra. So Srivas is one of them. He and his wife, Malini Devi, they are elders in the community. So it is said that when Nimai was born, Malini and Srivas were friends, of course, with Sachin and Jagannath Mishra. So they were given like advice on how they should raise their child. No? Some conscious parenting, like a mirrorless study now. No? How to raise their new son. He already have a hint. This boy will be pretty extraordinary, pretty mischievous as well. We studied, that was last year, right? We did the Mahaprabhu's study of the life of Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. Not Navadvip?
Navadvip was here, I think.
Yes. First Jagannath Puri and then Navadvip. Yes. Yeah. So when we went through Navadvip, Mahaprabhu's Kumar Lila, like his childhood pastimes in Navadvip. I mean, he was worse than Krishna Vrindavan. He was extremely naughty and mischievous. Yeah. So Srivas and Malini shared some piece of advice to Sachin and Jagannath Mishra. And of course, the more Mahaprabhu was growing, Srivas and Malini were like a mother and father for Mahaprabhu. Like a second mother and father, if you will. Advising, when Nimai grew like a pandit in his teenagehood, and he became like, in the context of the Lila, pretty an arrogant pandit who was showing off and inviting everyone to debates and trying to defeat everyone and defeating everyone, defeating himself and re-defeating himself and then take, you know. So Srivas will try to, because Srivas is also a pandit, you know, Srivas Pandit, he's known. There are many pandits, Kadadra Pandit, Srivas Pandit, Animai Pandit. And so Srivas will go on and give pandithood advice to Nimai, not like saying, don't be so proud. No? I mean, try to understand that all knowledge is nothing if you are not a devotee of Krishna. Because at that point, Nimai was not a devotee. He was a karmi. In the context of the Leela. No? He was a pandit, of course. No, we never say he's a karmi. I'm just joking. Sometimes devotees create this black and white. If someone is not a devotee, then he must fall into this category. So he was a pandit. And of course, this was an important role in the Leela, because then Mahaprabhu will show how much all knowledge concludes at the feet of devotion. He will show the pinnacle of Vedanta. That's a very interesting word, Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of knowledge. So what happens when knowledge reaches its end? What comes about beyond knowledge? So we follow Gaudiya Vedanta. No? What happens after knowledge? At the end of knowledge, according to Gaudiyas, according to Gauda, according to Mahaprabhu. But before reaching, showing that, he's showing what happens with knowledge, how much knowledge you can have. I mean, Mahaprabhu had more knowledge than anyone. But then he threw that to the Ganga, like we know. So Srivas will, like a devotional pandit, will advise him, please understand the purpose of knowledge. Bhakti is the greatest knowledge. Rajavidya, the king of knowledge. And of course, eventually, as we know, Nimai Pandit stops being only a pandit and becomes converted to Vaishnavism, becomes a devotee. So the whole Navadvip is totally vibrating with the excitement of Nimai Pandit has become a Vaishnava, because that was the only thing missing in him. He has all the qualities, the perfect quality for every person that you may think of, but he's not a devotee. Try to imagine. No? So it is said that the whole community of Vaishnavas was praying for Nimai to become a devotee. And he became a Vaishnava by the prayers of the Vaishnavas. He will say that. Because of your prayers, now I'm a Vaishnava. And he became the best of Vaishnavas, as we know. So eventually Srivas Pandit, my point is, he becomes a follower of Mahaprabhu. From being an elder who advises him, still is an elder in one sense, but he becomes, subservient to him, a follower of him, a devotee of Mahaprabhu. Like Advaita and all these elders that now becomes juniors in their own consideration, although Mahaprabhu treats them like elders, try to keep this etiquette. So Srivas was living in Navadvip. For those who have been to Navadvip, you may have had the chance of visiting his place, famous Srivas Sangam, a very beautiful place with its courtyard. So he had three brothers he lived with. He had a very huge family, and all of them were living there. No, it was Sri Kanta, Sri Ram, and Sri Pati, Pandits, and Srivas Pandit. So all of them with their specific families, all of them were, and Srinidhi Pandit. There were four, plus Srivas, five in total. So all of them were, Sri Kanta, I think, is another name for Srinidhi. Anyhow, big family. And all of them were living in the house of Srivas. And he was hosting, try to imagine, generally that's not the case nowadays. You live with your three brothers and all their wives and children and the mother. And it's like big place. So you may imagine, well, maybe Srivas has a very, wealthy grandfather, or he all got some inheritance so he can maintain all of them under a place. No. So maybe he's working a lot to keep the whole thing together. And interestingly, the reply is not. Srivas Pandit doesn't work. If you pay attention to the Leela, you will never see Srivas Pandit working. So was he lazy? Of course not. No. This is mainly highlighted when Mahaprabhu was going to his house and having kirtan. As we know, Srivas Pandit will give his own house to host the nightly kirtans in the courtyard, and host all the devotees all night and serve them and assist them and bring flowers and garlands and have servants adorning Mahaprabhu. So once Mahaprabhu is visiting and asks Srivas, how do you maintain all this? You have a huge house, three, four brothers living with you, with all their families. You have your own family, and I never see you working, like doing anything to earn money. So Mahaprabhu is like, how you're doing that? So he's showing the ideal of grihastha, extreme ideal of a grihastha. It's so extreme that be careful with trying to imitate that. If you don't have that faith, if you have Sriva's faith, you can try, no problem. So what Sriva say, he say basically, well, when I need something, I make three clappings, no? Like asking Lakshmi to provide. I mean, I clap once first. If nothing is coming, clap twice. If a third one is about nothing happening, I'm just about to throw myself into the Ganga. And everything is over. And Lakshmi always provides. So Mahaprabhu is seeing, and Sri was saying that not because of some psychological dysfunctionality, but he has this faith. He has, I mean, I'm surrendered to your feet, to your service, so whatever is needed is for your service, it's not for me. It has to be provided. Actually, Sriva's Pandit hinting to Mahaprabhu, actually, you are providing indirectly. You are making all this happen. So Mahaprabhu is saying that, and he's telling to him, there will never be anything lacking in your house. No, you will always receive what you need. No, so again, externally it seems laziness. He's not doing anything. Just Krishna, give me or I will kill myself. But actually, that's something more. He has deep faith Krishna will provide. Yoga kshimam bahamyaham. Krishna says that in the Gita. Ananashintayantaman. To he who fully surrenders to me, I give them what they need, I preserve what they have. Tamman manaskamat pranam adarti tyakta dehika yityakta loka dharmastam adarti tambibarmyaham. Also to the gopis, he says, the gopis had given to me their own lives. So, what to speak of their time, their money, their own lives are totally given to me. So, how will I not reciprocate with them? I mean, I have to maintain them. Because they have surrendered to me fully. So, surrender to Krishna fully means Krishna has the personal responsibility of maintaining that devotee. No? That's the example given in regarding to Saranagati or to Atmanivedanam, to submission of oneself and to Bhagavan. It's like when the example is when a cow is being sold from one owner to another, the cow has nothing to do. The cow is just like, okay, now I have a new owner and the owner will maintain me. Cow won't do anything for her own maintenance. It will be there, and when the cow is taken, come here, come there, cow will follow, trusting the master. So similarly, the example sometimes is given to illustrate this principle of Goptritve Varanam, the central aspect of Saranagati, Swarup Lakshan, which is Krishna is maintaining me. Krishna is my maintainer, and I have faith in that. That's happening. He's directly doing that. So that's an important exercise for our consciousness as sadhakas, not to really deeply feel that Krishna is maintaining me. Not just convince me, but to realize that. So anyhow, Sriva's Pandit then, in this way, he offered his whole life, and especially he's known for having offered his house and the courtyard in his house, the Angan. That's why his place is called Sriva's Angan. Angan means like a courtyard. So in that courtyard, every night Mahaprabhu will dance and sing for the whole night, eternally. That will happen in Nityanavadi, in Sriva Sangam. Srivas is a name for it can be for Narayan, but also can be for Bhagavan in the highest sense. Now, Vas means residence, and Sri can be Lakshmi, or it can be Radha. No, Srivas means there where Lakshmi resides, which in that case will be the feet of Narayan, or that place where Radha resides, which can be in this case the courtyard of Srivas, because every night there Mahaprabhu enters into Radhabhav and executes Rasa Sankirtan every night. So in that sense, Radha is residing there constantly, eternally. Srivas. So the courtyard where Sri Radha resides, that's the house of Srivas. And that nightly kirtan is a parallel of the Rasa Lila in Vrindavan. You have Rasa Lila in Vrindavan, you have Rasa Kirtan or Rasa Sankirtan in Srivas Pandit. Now, there are many of these parallels between Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila. Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila. And Srivas Pandit is hosting Mahaprabhu every single night forever. So he's the host par excellence. If you want to know what that means to be a good host in service, go to Srivas Pandit. He's making his house, family, wealth, all being available. So in that sense, we could say he's the most important member of the Panchatattva. Sometimes we say, we can speak of each one of the five members of the Panchatattva as the most important, from different perspectives. In one sense, we can say Srivas is the most important because he's allowing this Rasa Kirtan to exist forever in his house, because he's personifying all our potential in the topmost perfection. So that's pretty important to have that reference for us. Someone is hearing from there?
No, it's an interruption. When it's on the floor, it interrupts.
I see. You want to put it here or it's not? Doesn't make a difference?
I wouldn't be able to see.
I see. Okay. So, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, a few words before we finished, for us as sadhakas, our perspective is to enter this Nitya Lila, Nitya Navadvip, in this kirtan of Srivas Thakur. That's kind of sometimes described as the entry point for us into the eternity of Gaur Lila. All the sannyasa of Mahaprabhu started his kirtan in Srivas Angam, in Navadvip. Then, as we know, the kirtan went out of Srivas Angam and started to go outside of Navadvip. When the Kasi was chastised, the kirtan that at that point was only in Srivas Sangam for a selected group went out, and then Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, went to Puri. But all the things that he talked in Puri as a sannyasi, all the siksha, all the example, is for us to understand and apply that in such a way that it brings us back into the kirtan at Srivas Sangam, because that's the eternal point where we want to enter forever, not Jagannath Puri. So Mahaprabhu goes out of Navadvip to Puri to bring us back to Navadvip, basically. In the same way that Krishna goes out of Vrindavan to Mathura and Dwarka. But just, if you understand properly the Leelas of Mathura and Dwarka, you understand, actually they are pointing back to Vrindavan. Indirectly, they are, by contrast, by comparison, they are showing the glory of Vrindavan. So whatever Krishna is doing outside of Braj is just pointing back to Braj. So whatever Mahaprabhu is doing outside of Navadvip, which is Braj, it only serves to highlight the return, if you will, to Navadvip and the eternal point of entrance for us there. So that's what we want to enter. When Mahaprabhu, Nimai, Gauranga, Chandra, he's dancing in the courtyard of Srivas in full intimacy with his associates. Because Mahaprabhu is experiencing something very unique in Gambira, in Jagannath Puri, as a sannyasi in his last days or years. But not everyone is allowed to enter there, as you know. At that point, he's only with Swarup Damodar and Rai Ramananda mostly. Nobody else is basically allowed to enter. Very intimate setting. But those things that Mahaprabhu is tasting there, he's tasting every single night, eternally, in the courtyard of Srivas. And we are invited to take part of that, basically. And he's executing his kirtan in the intimacy of his internal, eternal associates. So it is said that after Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, he left Navadvip, as we know, practically never to return, with a very few exceptions here and there. So it is said that Srivas Pandit couldn't tolerate continue living in Navadvip without Mahaprabhu. It was too much for him. So he moved to one place called Kumarhat, which is relatively close, but it's not in Navadvip per se. He moved with his whole family there, tortured by separation of Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu visited him there when he went to Shantipur after acceptance, and yes, he passed in that direction. But Srivas, of course, with his brothers, will go to visit Mahaprabhu every year to Puri. Remember that during Chaturmasya, all the devotees in Bengal and other parts will visit Mahaprabhu for 4 months. That's a pretty comprehensive visit. Not just for a week, 2 weeks, but one third of the year. Every single year they will go there. And also they will, he will go, although he left Navadvip, he will go to Navadvip to visit the remaining associates there, especially Sachi Mata, Vishnupriya, who were basically never to see Mahaprabhu again. They were not going to Puri and so on. So they will stay some days there, bring news about Mahaprabhu. So let's conclude our today's exposition by sharing one of these many important pastimes of Srivas that actually showcase his service disposition, which again try to make full circle and going back to how Srivas Pandit is showing our potential as Tatastha Shakti, which means how much our service disposition can be expanded, upgraded, maximized. And of course, when we speak about these important personalities, in one sense, the most important thing to highlight is their service disposition. That's what we are interested in. Let's hear about this person, what's their service disposition? Because that's what they are. That's who they are. Ideally, we want to be our service disposition. That's the identity we want to develop, an identity as a servant. So every sevaka, every servant has a unique service disposition. So Srivas is not the exception to the rule. So there is a famous lila which has to be properly understood. It may sound pretty extreme to some, but in proper context, that will be appreciated. We shared that in our previous series. So in one moment, Mahaprabhu was executing kirtan in Srivas Sangam, dancing, singing ecstatically. And Srivas, at that time, he had one little boy, son, that was just born a few days before. So he was a baby of a few days. And he left his body at that moment during kirtan. I mean, the boy was not in the kirtan, he was in the room. So the mother was there, and family members were there. Srivas was in the kirtan without knowing that this happened. So everyone was absorbing the joy of kirtan. But eventually Srivas is called and he receives the news. Your child has died. So Srivas said, and then comes the challenging part for those who may not on the level of Srivas, basically. When Srivas say, please do not cry too loudly because I don't want Mahaprabhu to be disturbed or interrupted in his kirtan. This is the most important thing here. Topmost priority is we don't want to disturb the mood of our Prabhu. He's immersed in something. Yeah, but our child just died. Yeah. But that's not the most important thing. You have to swallow that pill. But again, it's similar to what I said the other day. Now, when Balaram was seeing the Brahma Vimohan Lila, after Krishna expanded as the friends and the calves for a year, and at one point Balaram saw, there's something strange here. All the calves are loving their calves more than Krishna. That cannot happen. All the mothers and fathers are loving their child, the children, more than Krishna. Of course, those were Krishna's expansion. That's what how he, they could love him. They were not loving them more than Krishna. They were loving Krishna. But Balaram didn't know that at that point. So he was thinking, this is so strange. All the parents are loving their children more than Krishna. There's something out of place here. The cows are loving the calf more than Krishna. This is something weird. Again, for us, it might be like, there's nothing weird there. You should love your child, but not more than Krishna. But we have to be mature to understand that. If I tell you that, I'm not telling you stop loving your child. You follow me? If I tell you, Mahaprabhu, you should love Krishna more than Christina. I'm not telling you stop loving Christina or love her less. If you understand my words, you understand he's telling me to love Krishna more. Because I can only love someone comprehensively through Krishna. Now, by seeing the person in connection to the center, which is Krishna. My center is Krishna, her center is Krishna. We love each other with the center in between us. Because if you take out the center, my so-called love is just selfish attachment. Although I may call it love, and I may be... You follow my point? I think that's basic teaching, but hard pill to swallow in practice. So Srivas is showing this here also, like basically saying, stop crying, don't lament. No, I don't want Mahaprabhu to be disturbed. And he will say, if you continue crying, I'll throw myself into the Ganga. He always had this type of device. You Lakshmi do not provide, I throw myself into the Ganga. If you stop crying, I throw myself into the Ganga. So everyone knew, when he says that, he will do that. Yeah. So, and of course he will say things like, but he died, the child died. And he'll say, what better thing than to die while Mahaprabhu is doing kirtan? Again, he was not being cold-hearted. He was really making the point. I mean, if you can choose when to leave your body, hopefully it's in the midst of Mahaprabhu doing kirtan. What can be the most possible auspicious situation? So Srivas returns to the kirtan, and he joins Mahaprabhu and everyone is singing. But Mahaprabhu somehow doesn't feel the usual joy that he feels in kirtan. So he stops the kirtan and says, I don't feel the usual joy here. And sometimes this happens in kirtan, as you know. Sometimes because there was someone hiding behind the curtains that didn't have the adhikar for that. Or sometimes because some tragedy happened, like in this case. So Mahaprabhu said, is everything okay here? He asked Srivas, the owner of the house. He said, yes, of course, with having your blossoming lotus-like face in our house, how there can be some problem. And again, he was really meaning that. He was not making a show. He was really feeling everything is okay. You are in my house doing Sankirtan. I mean, what can be the problem? So they continue dancing and singing. But Mahaprabhu says, still I cannot feel my usual joy. Something has any tragedy happened here? So Srivas doesn't say anything. But some other of the family members come and say, like, yeah, our child died 7 hours ago. So some hours continued in the kirtan. Mahaprabhu continued and tried. And Mahaprabhu says that, looks at Srivas, like saying, but you told me that nothing happened. And Srivas says, but I mean, if you would have stopped dancing, I would have died, Srivas says. No, I mean, that's death for me. That real death is if you stop your Sankirtan. If you continue your Sankirtan, so many things can happen in between that, even death. But if your Sankirtan is on, there is no death. If your Sankirtan is off, that's death. That was the point you want to make. And Mahaprabhu started to cry when he saw Srivas Thakur's loving disposition and how much he was identified with the need of Mahaprabhu. He was so much obsessed with serving Mahaprabhu and pleasing Mahaprabhu that he left all other consideration to the topmost extremes. Mahaprabhu started to cry, totally moved, and say, how can I ever leave a devotee like this? He points to Srivas. How can I ever leave someone like Srivas? And of course, there is a happy end to the story. Mahaprabhu brings the boy back to life. No? And the boy starts to, like a baby, if you start to instruct everyone about the difference between body and soul and all this type of instructions given sometimes in moments like that. And eventually the boy leaves because he's making the point, actually I was destined to leave, but by leaving this condition I'm actually attaining ultimate liberation, so please do not lament. This was destined to happen. All this type of... And he passes away. But now everyone is like in the lila, enlightened by the instructions. Again, all of them are eternal associates. So they don't need to be enlightened about the difference between body and soul. but this is mostly for us. No? So when that happens and the boy leaves, Mahaprabhu tells to Srivas, remember, Srivas is Mahaprabhu's elder, say, from now on, you have no child, but from now on, me and Nityananda, me and Nitai, will be your children. No? So you have now two. No, not zero. And we will never abandon you. No, making that point, like, we will eternally be there with you. And that's a fact. Every single day for eternity, they are there in his place. If they are in one place in the Nitya Lila now, that's Riva Sangam. There are some other places, but that's the recurring Lila Stali, place for Lila. So this is a very important point, because again, we are speaking about the serving disposition of Srivas, how much he was, in the good sense of the term, he was a fanatical of Mahaprabhu's pleasure. He had no other considerations. He was so identified to nourishing the mood of Bhagavan. So we should, again, he's representing our ultimate potential to attain. Again, we can't imitate him, but we can draw some inspiration from his example. How to... Okay, Mahaprabhu is tasting certain mood, how to nourish that, how to take care of that, how to avoid any disturbance of that, like Swarup Damodar, who will filter all the poems that were presented to Mahaprabhu, and first Swarup Damodar will go through them to see if there's not any rasabhas and proper mixture of mellows, because if Mahaprabhu will read that, he will be so disturbed in his inner sensitive world. So they were very attentive, taking care of the mood of Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada once said that also. He said, don't disturb the mood of Gaur. No. Gaur is Krishna in a very particular mood, in a very unique, specific emotional moment. Don't disturb that. Not only don't disturb that, of course, try to nourish that. No, our service with Mahaprabhu is not just... I try not to disturb you. I try to make you happy, to give you pleasure. Of course, maybe in our present situation, we are more concerned with our own disturbances yet. We are yet too disturbed by this or that, and we are trying to figure that out and trying to not be disturbed ourselves. Maybe on some other level, we will be concerned how not to disturb the mood of Gaur, the mood of Bhagavan, how not to disturb the Vaishnav, the sadhus. But eventually, on top of that, if you want to present that in sequence, first we have our own disturbances. We are disturbed. How to pacify that. Then how not to disturb the sadhus. And then how to create relief to the disturbance they are experiencing. But the disturbance is transcendental. You follow? A guru, as Guru Maharaj, my Guru Maharaj will say, the guru is so much in need. Like Rupa Goswami will say, Tunde tanda vini ratimbitanute tundavali labdhaye karna kroda kadam vini ghatayate karnarbudhi vyaspriham cheta prangana sangini vijayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyat viramritay krishneti varnam dayi. So Rupa Goswami is praying their famous verse. He's saying, I don't like to ask anything to Krishna, but if I can ask something, please give me millions of years, because I only have two. And there's so much nectar coming from these two syllables, Krishna, Krishna. So much is coming that I just can't catch a little bit of that with my 2 years. But I need millions of them to properly receive all that is coming to me. I'm not hosting properly, honoring properly all this nectar. I'm failing terribly. So Krishna, if I can ask something, give me millions. That's the only blessing I can ask. Millions of years. And if I can ask something more, give me millions of tongues to properly chant the name and honor all the nectar that is coming from that. In other words, my Guru Maharaj will say, the guru is a desperate person. He's in need. I need millions of tongues, millions of years. That's why the guru will ask her disciples, give me your ears. Pay attention to what I have to. It's a way of giving me your ears, and I can somehow, by extension, extend my capacity of having more ears. Mm-hmm. And the disciples will render service to their guru in that moment. Oh, Gurudev is so needy of ears. We have to give our ears to what he has to say. Mm-hmm. So again, the point is these kind personalities are in need. Mm-hmm. Krishna is in need. Mm-hmm. Guru is in need. So, and they may be disturbed by separation. That's what Krishna says, Vinasaya Chaduskritam, Paritranaya Sadhanam. What does Krishna say in the Gita? Paritranaya Sadhanam. Which means, I came to protect the sadhus. So the point is, why Krishna is saying that? Because a sadhu is technically someone who is taking shelter in Krishna, and who have full trust that Krishna is protecting them. And they are protected by Krishna. So why Krishna has to come and protect them? You follow? I mean, sadhu is someone fully surrendered to Krishna. And fully surrendered means Gopri Tuiva, Nanam Tata, Rakshishati, Bishpasu. They have full conviction Krishna will protect me and Krishna will protect them. So why Krishna is saying, I come to protect them? They are already protected. So the deeper meaning is, Krishna says, I come to protect them from themselves. Because those sadhus are so much suffering in separation from me that I have to appear myself on the world, give my darshan, because they are so desperate, so disturbed by separation. So I have to go and save them. They can no longer wait in separation. So they're too disturbed. So again, my point is, in some level, instead of being concerned with our mundane disturbance, we have to be serving divine disturbance. How to relieve the disturbance that the sadhus may feel. On in eternity, in service to Mahaprabhu, in service to Sushilada and Krishna. As I like to say, although it may sound a little bit too much, but reality is too much. On a daily basis, Sushilada and Krishna are meeting but separating from each other. Those are the dynamics of the Leela that make the Leela new and fresh. And in separation from each other, Radha and Krishna are basically dying by not seeing each other. They reach a point where they are about to die, for they never die. No? But one of the symptoms of separation, of 10 symptoms, the last one is death. It doesn't mean that you literally die, but you feel like, if I do not get to see my beloved, I'm dying. Mahaprabhu experiences similar things in Gaur Lila, being in Radha Bhav, in separation from Krishna. So they are about to die on a daily basis for eternity. And part of our service to them in eternity is to save their lives somehow. So that will be part of your service in eternity. You have to save the life of God every single day for eternity. So better you prepare for that. It's not a joke. That's my point. So now I will go to Golok Vrindavan and drink some cocktail there and have some rest, and that's relaxed. No, God needs to be saved. Krishna needs to be saved. Radha needs to be saved. And depending, Priyanarma Sakas will be there next to Krishna, saving his life, giving new hope. You will meet Radha and bring in some garland and putting that with the color of Radha's hue that was used by her, and that will bring Krishna life and sing appropriate songs and poems. And Manjaris will be doing similarly with Sri. They have to revive her every single day. So again, they are totally identified, my point is, with the necessity of service. With the necessity of service. And again, I gave the example of Priyanarma Sagas saving the life of Krishna. And one of these Priyanarma Sagas is Madhumanga. Priyanarma Sagas and Madhumanga will save Krishna's life on a daily basis. So similarly, this Priyanarma Saka Madhumangal, when he appears in Gaur Lila, he's Shiva's pandit, and he's saving Mahaprabhu's life on a daily basis, in separation, in so many ways, surrendering his house, his wealth, his family, his very self in Gaur Seva, in the service of Mahaprabhu, giving everything. So that's an important lesson for us. That's how we have to begin or continue our journey in service to Guru and Vaishnava. Sarva Artha Atma Arpanam Guru, says the Bhagavatam. How to repay Sri Guru? Sarva Artha Atma Arpanam. You have to present as an offering all your wealth and all your being. For wealth doesn't mean here's my credit card or anything. But wealth means all that you consider valuable in your life. You have to employ that in service of that person that you consider most valuable in your life. It shouldn't be an artificial imposition. It should be like an irresistible call. That's how it works. Do not do that if you don't feel that that call. Because if not, will be some forced thing. But if we properly connect with Guru, Sadhu, Vaishnava, Mahaprabhu, we will appreciate, we will have a glimpse of the dignity of the ideal, you know, how much integrity is there. So we will feel this all attractive. And we want to give us ourselves. So Srivas is this unique example of full giving of everything, himself, everything connected to himself, and totally identify with the necessity of the object of his love, to the point of saving his life on a daily basis for eternity. And with that example, again he's showing us our potential, the ultimate potential as Tatastha Shakti. That's what Srivas Thakur means. All that we can be as Jivas. Mm-hmm. If we choose to take shelter in Bhakti, that's our ultimate potential in Bhakti. That's the bright horizon. All that we can be, as we say the other day, just Krishna in the Gita, when he describes the soul, he says, the soul is not this, it's not that, cannot be killed, cannot be burned, it's not born, it's not... But then when he says something positive, he says three times, Ashtaryabhat, 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 which means wonderful. Soul is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. He's telling us, you are wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But I will add to that, that just three times of wonderful, especially refer not only to the Atma, but when the Atma takes shelter in Bhakti, and all that will come from that. When the soul, minds, you say? Its own potential, extracts all that the soul can be in the context of Bhakti. Ashtaryabhat has to do with that. Wonderful. Now Krishna is, again, seeing us regarding all that we can be. According to our potential. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So while today we are celebrating again Srivas Thakur's disappearance day, but in one sense we are celebrating all that we can be. And we are reminding ourselves, don't forget, this is all that you can be. No, in these personalities we are reminded, all that you can be. That we are reminded of that unique invitation, that unique gift, that is allowing us, even at present, to have a glimpse of all this, our ultimate prospect, which is worthy of a Mahotsav, of a great celebration. So that's why we are celebrating today. We are celebrating the chance that is extending to us. Anyhow, Srivas Pandit Ki Jai. So I don't know if there are any questions before we conclude today's, put our discourse to rest. Yes, I do.
I was wondering about Guru Maharaj made an explanation about in the Gaura Gayatri, in the Gayatri Mantra, which is Diksha Mantra, so that it is mentioned there exactly this part, that by knowing about or understanding Chaitanya Lila, especially this Madhya Lila, that we can actually understand or go to this eternal Nityanavadvipa. And I just wondered what can be, how we can learn more about it. Or
more about what?
About how to understand the Madhya Lila in order to be able to meditate on this eternal what source, what to read, or what specific sadhana, or I don't know how to,
well,
to go into this direction.
The Madhya Lila is to be read for that. Yeah, I think the main point that that Guru Maharaj is making there is that Chaitanya, of course, Chaitanya is the name of Mahaprabhu, was a sannyasi. Mm-hmm. So that refers to, which is the first one of the three names appearing in that line. And so that means try to first understand or to know, that's the word, vidmahe. Try to know Mahaprabhu was Chaitanya first. Like I said today, try to go through his sannyas lila, through his madhya lila, and that will take you to Navadvip. Because as a sannyasi, Mahaprabhu has established an example, acharya lila. His sannyas lila is called as acharya lila. That's what Krishna Das Kaviraj mostly elaborated in the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because Adi Lila has more to do with Navadvip Lila. Anta Lila has more to do with Gambira Lila, I will say. And there is not that much that we can learn from. It's just ecstasy after ecstasy. You cannot just like take that and apply that in sadhana. I will rub my head onto the wall or something. You cannot do that. I mean, that's not... That's dysfunctional. But the Madhya Lila, that shows Mahaprabhu's example as a practitioner, strictness as a sannyasi, that of course you cannot just imitate that either on that level. But there is so much siksha in that section, so much, especially the sections where he's instructing Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, very lengthy chapters. The conversation he has with Ramananda Roy when he's converting Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakasananda, Saraswati. All these are very lengthy sections that includes lots of siksha. And so the point is lots of sambandha gyan, lots of conceptual orientation. So we should know those sections, go through those sections, learn the Siddhanta, learn the Tattva, and of course apply that in practice, become like a very exemplary sadhaka, as Mahaprabhu himself is showing, and that naturally in turn will give us a foundation to appreciate the ultimate purpose of that, which is Navadvip Lila, where he is not a sannyasi, when he is existing eternally there, and of course there are some descriptions of that Nitya Lila on Navadvip, and eventually one can take advantage of them. One can even meditate on them on a daily basis. But I will say that has more to do with a certain stage with one's mind is more under control, if you will, by applying the teachings that Mahaprabhu gives in the Madhya Lila as a sadhaka. You will be more aligned, and eventually one can enter into more contemplative, introspective types of meditations regarding his Navadvip Lila, if you will. So that will be a way of explaining how to go through Madhya Lila. So, of course, the sections to go in that connection is the Madhya Lila itself of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the longer of the three parts, basically. It's almost the double of the other two. Yeah. Okay, something else? Here's one question on the chat. I will read that and we conclude there. It says, what is the example we could take from the episode with the death baby of the baby and Shriva's Pandit's reaction to it? It is clearly not to imitate, especially as it would be heartless from a normal point of view. So, what is the example we could take? What does the audience say? Hopefully you don't conclude that Shriva's Pandit was a fanatical and bad father or stuff like this. So what can we take? Us, not being Srivas Pandit. I mean, not only one thing, for sure. Hopefully.
We have a lot of work to do to get to his.
That's a good one, yeah. So we have a lot to... I am repeating what the boy Prabhu mentioned. That, yeah, we have... One teaching is we are not on Srivas Thakur's level, so we can just imitate. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't get there. No, I mean, get there doesn't mean when I will get there so my baby dies and I can't. No, it's not in that sense. But it's clearly seen that he has a level of insight that goes way beyond of what's taking place on the physical level. No? And that's the main point, of course, that we want to make here. We are not promoting like, okay, if your child dies, you know what to do now. Or something like that. Because again, for most of us, to imitate the high personality will be dysfunctional, totally dysfunctional. So it's important also to not to imitate, as Savai was saying, like to understand I have a long way to do. So if there's a long way to go there, it means I cannot just do what they are doing. I cannot just try to jump and be there. I can't imitate. I have to draw some inspiration and see how that inspiration takes shape in my stage, which of course in general will take the form as the one who is making the question here is, I'll take care of my family, of course. and if your child dies, for sure, there will be a place for grieving. Not for lamentation, for grieving. There are two different things. It's important to make the difference. Krishna speaks in the Gita, do not lament for things that are not worthy of lamentation. But grieving has to do with other things, not with properly expressing our emotions and closing chapters in a way that are leading to deeper ones, and we are at peace with ourselves, we understand what's taking place, and so on. And we see when even great Vaishnavas pass away, other great Vaishnavas also are grieving their loss. So it's not that you cannot, you shouldn't cry for anyone or things like that. So that's what I say in the beginning. Shiva's example is an extreme one. Like wanting to also make a point, like when you are totally like identify with, like one of the points, I want to take care of the mood of Mahaprabhu. And even if the most extreme situation is happening, that's still a priority. Again, we have to also take the lesson behind that, not again just take literally and try to do copy-paste in our life, but just the priority is Krishna's pleasure. Again, in practice, still, that's not the priority for us. And again, we shouldn't be tortured by that, but also we shouldn't cheat ourselves thinking, because it's not priority for me, it's not priority. Still priority. If it's not priority for me, then I should make some adjustment gradually to make Krishna's will my priority. Again, not like a forced thing, but I should understand why Krishna's will is a priority. I should conclude that naturally. And understand, if I satisfy his priority, whatever in connection to me is satisfied at the same time. Because it's like, when you, the example always is, if you pour water on the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches and twigs will be nourished. If you try just to put water on one leaf, the tree will die. You follow? So if you serve Krishna, the root, the center, everything else, your child, your wife, everything is nourished in connection to that. If you just concentrate only on one aspect but neglect Krishna, you actually are neglecting both things. So these are some of the general lessons. Mahaprabhu had some other lesson to add?
I was thinking that it's an extreme display of his attitude, but maybe this is the way he always acts, in the sense that even if we take this to ourselves, it's the what is the most proper thing to do. Because when Mahaprabhu brings back the child, that, as you said, the child says, I'm moving on, like it's attaining maybe liberation. So in this sense, he shows us how to proper, that in one situation we can behave from our mind, like become self-focused, like, now I want to experience this, to eat the situation, let's say. And if we are focusing the more serving attitude, and it's like I don't wanna eat up the situation, I wanna act in the situation in a proper way, which is in that, as you said, actually he loves the child, so best for the child is to leave the body during Mahaprabhu's kirtan and to continue this situation. So if it shows that he lacks this material consciousness that we have, which makes us want to grab all the situations and make them about us. No. And there is no anarthas in his behavior.
Yeah. And then, of course, when the child was brought back to life, he himself said, actually, this has to happen and I had to experience this. So that further confirmed Srivas was right. Now, like he knew if that happened, of course, it's for some reason. It's not that it shouldn't have happened. again, we cannot imitate, but also we cannot tell Tribhas, you were wrong. But again, I understand that when someone has an extremely perfect vision of reality, if you don't have anything close than that to that, you may feel you are cold, you are not too whatever. And actually, maybe that person is thinking, you are cold-hearted. Because it's a very... You follow my point, no? For some people, if I tell them, Krishna is my priority in my life, about my family or whatever, so I say, why you are so insensitive? And the other person will say, and what's your priority? First, my car, my family, my dog, my TV, my cell phone. And yeah, Krishna is there, but first... And the other person will feel, you are so insensitive. So the question, of course, is which of them is closer to reality? Because again, the question here says, from a normal point of view, it seems heartless. The question is, what's a normal point of view? What's normal for us? How much normal is that? I mean, you have to Paulina Farishati. And again, this is not to condemn anyone and to say, you are abnormal, you are totally living backwards to reality, but we should also have the courage and maturity to acknowledge, on some level, I'm upside down yet. I'm not fully aligned with reality. I'm attached to my body. I'm attached to the extensions of my ego. I'm attached to so many things. So if I can acknowledge that, if that's happening, hopefully that's not happening, and I'm surrounded by totally transcendental personalities, but it's that's happening on some level, you cannot just like claim what I feel and see is the ultimate reality and this is a normal life. That's not normal. I mean, really, normal life means to have love for Krishna. Of course, we are not living in a normal world, if you will. I mean, so of course, what is really normal seems abnormal here. But if you have a look at Golok Vrindavan, again, as Baladev was thinking, the cows are loving more their calves than Krishna. This is not normal. Here, that will be abnormal, but for Baladev, was like, here will be normal, my point, no? I love my kids, of course, more than anyone else. But what about God? In Golok, that's happening. Here is another thing. So again, I know this may be shocking for some, but at the same time, we should ask why it's shocking for me. If this story is shocking for someone, we should also have the courage, why it's shocking for me? What's the shock about? What's the root of the shock? Because the story in itself is something wrong about that? Or maybe there's something wrong in me that creates the shock? Because that story comes to show in my face how much attached I am, how much fearful I am, how much Krishna is not my priority yet. And it's like in your face, darshan. We're like, this is too much. Too much, too much. To the point that you feel, no, Srivas is the bad guy here. And of course, the idea is not to conclude that. No? So the idea is to take responsibility that these lilas are there to showcase something. To different people, according to where you are, this will mean something different. If you don't have those material attachments and you keep this story, for sure you will catch some other part of the story. And it's okay. And everyone has to take their particular part from their perspective and take full responsibility for that, basically. So we are not trying to impose, all of you should take this story to mean this, and you have to mean anything. No? But you have to draw something from here and to be introspective. Anyhow, we already 1.5 hours, so I think we can conclude here. And tomorrow we meet again at the same time for Brahma Stuti again, returning to the prayers of Brahmaji. Thank you so much. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadri ki jai. Tirubab Mahotsav Titi Srivas Pandit Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand Ki Jai.